This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning and welcome to 3CR's Wednesday Breakfast. This morning's show is part of the Sustainable Breakfast series and we're broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth. So come down here this morning, grab yourself some breakfast and be part of our live audience.
And we've got a very exciting show coming up for this morning's special breakfast show. First up, after the front page, Regan will be speaking with... Well, first we'll hear about the menu.
Yeah.
For breakfast.
I heard we had pancakes this morning, but I think that's an important fact to confirm.
So that will be confirmed by the volunteers here at the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op.
And following that, I'll be speaking to Adam Bonberg and Mark Tyler about Earthworker and particularly Eureka's Future, which is producing solar hot water systems in Dandenong and is the first workers' cooperative manufacturing for solar. And then at 7:30, I'll be speaking to Sarah Davis and Theo Kitchener about the Resilience Co-ops Network, which is working on a whole lot of projects. The first one that seems to be getting off the ground is an urban farming cooperative.
Mm. And after that, we will hear from the Anti-Nuclear and Clean Energy Collective, known as the ACE Collective, which is one of the collectives here at Friends of the Earth. And I think we'll have Colin and Jem chatting to us about what they're involved with at the moment and particularly about the upcoming radioactive exposure tour, which is going to New South Wales and then South Australia this year. Mm. And after that, we will have... Bikahoa from the Community Health Centre, the Co-Health Community Health Centre, and she's going to be speaking with us about a project they're doing called Living in Harmony, which is around domestic violence in the Housing Commission flats. So looking...
Yeah.
Great show.
Looking a great lineup. So next up we've got what's on the menu for this morning.
Breakfast at Friends of the Earth. What's on the menu today? Is it beans? Is it greens? Is it shrooms? Is it carrots? Breakfast at Friends of the Earth. Here, right now.
Welcome back to Wednesday Breakfast. We're joined by Sandy from the Friends of the Earth Kitchen to give us the lowdown on what's on the menu this morning.
Hi. So we've got quinoa and coconut pancakes. Ooh. They're pretty yummy. They've got coconut cream and cooked quinoa and cinnamon and other good things in them. Yeah.
Sounds like, yeah, not your usual wheat pancake.
Well, it's got spelt flour in it, so it's got a little bit of that. But, yeah, with an almond cacao sauce and some poached apple grape.
Wow.
Deliciousness, faux style.
So no excuse if you're listening and you're not already here. Because unless you're making yourself quinoa and spelt pancakes with cacao sauce at home, then you've really got no reason to not come.
That's right. Yeah, come on down. It's going to be really nice.
Thanks very much. Enjoy. We're looking forward to having some of those after the show. I'm sure we'll like spot people eating them and
walking down the street.
Yeah. So don't have food jealousy, people. Come down here.
Good.
The front page, where 3CR Breakfast explores what's being reported and what's not in Australia's mainstream media. how the media prioritise the day's news, including issues of bias, corporate influence, and who gets a voice and who doesn't. Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 8 a.m. A critical analysis of the nation's newspapers.
So this morning, Wednesday the 25th of March, the Australian newspaper has a large picture of a six-year-old boy, Wasim Ravzi, who is under the headline Quranic Kidney, Kindi, poster boy six calls on kids to answer prophet. And it's linking two particular events which don't really seem like they need to be linked. The first of which is a conference that's being held in Melbourne, which is using children as part of its advertising. It's a radical Islamic conference, which is organised by the Islamic Research and Education Academy, which is seen as somewhat suspect as a very conservative religious organisation. And it's speaking about the six-year-old Melbourne boy who will be conducting a workshop there. It says on the Facebook page that the workshop is about how to talk to non-Muslims about the faith, reading Arabic, learning the Quran, memorization, comparative religious studies, and speaking techniques. This is right next to an article that they have about Australian children trapped in terror web, and talks about children as young as eight being recruited to be foreign fighters. So they're linking completely different activities and basically claiming, well, or implying that the Islamic Research and Educational Academy is somewhat of a terrorist organisation, which is elsewhere described by a counterterrorism expert, Greg Barton, in the article as a clearly religiously conservative organisation, but at least in their public forum, their speaker made a clear argument against violent extremism. And there's two organisations which are quoted in the article, the Islamic Council of Victoria and the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils, claiming that it's important to reserve judgment until the children have actually spoken at the conference, that it sometimes sounds worse than it is, and they might actually just be reciting readings from the Quran. So it's really seems like this story has blown up a huge amount. Also on the front page is wasteful defence spending and discussing the importance of defence reform. Another small article down the bottom about Clive Palmer being rich, it seems. So that came as a surprise to me. So there's a quote here from him. I've got enough money to sleep in a bed at night, to have a good time. I'm pretty happy. I can live on $30 million or $40 million a year. I can be all right with that. Of course, everyone's interested about my financial status, but it's fine. I haven't got any debts. I've got billions of dollars of assets, so I'm a happy chappy. So that was the full quote from Clive Palmer. I'm not exactly sure why that became front page news, but it's there.
Okay, and over to The Age. We've got a photo of a couple of train carriages and the heading Tricks of the Train.
Oh, that's a good one. Good one, Age.
Bit of alliteration. And so there's been apparently exclusive report found by The Age, which is about metro terminating trains partway along the line so that they meet lucrative government performance targets. So there's been a new reporting system introduced by the government which assesses the data, independently assesses the data given in by Metro so that they can double check their punctuality. But Metro has found a way to I think what it's saying is actually terminate trains early, and apparently also regularly skip the City Loop and the Altona Loop. It bypassed these 71 times between March 1st and March 7th. So I guess it's just showing how these kind of incentive targets aren't really working. And Metro, our favourite, you know, privatised transport company, is getting these bonuses from the government for delivering quite dodgy, inconvenient services. So that's a bit of, you know, I guess good reporting by The Age, letting us know what's really going on. And otherwise, the front page, that's all there is, really. It's a bit scant. And looking in further, we have on page 2 an article about there's a mum's activist group and they've set up this Hush, which is a challenge to partners or husbands or dads. It's a very heteronormative article to do all the chores, all the things that a mum does on the weekend. So it sort of feels like it's, you know, an article from the 50s. But it's about, I mean, it does bring up some good issues in terms of all the invisible work that is still generally left to mothers or those in the mum's role. But it's fairly shallow kind of article in that it doesn't bring up any broader, I guess, system or society kind of attitudes towards these. It's very sort of personalised and quite, you know, going for a kind of a funny tone of like, oh, most of the dads found it tricky and didn't realise how much the mums really did, and then they thought more about it, and it's got a photo of a buff white guy like unloading the dishwasher. It's not very critical, but I guess, you know, maybe about as feminist as The Age gets these days, really.
Perhaps. On page 3 of The Australian, there's an article which is discussing the World Health Organization recent report that Monsanto's Roundup, or glyphosate as it's known, which is the most used herbicide in Australia and the US, is probably a carcinogen. And the article that's in The Australian uses two reputable sources to discuss this issue. Firstly, Monsanto explaining their outrage and talking about how it's a gender-driven bias. And secondly, a South Australian grain grower who speaks about using glyphosate and that it's probably just scaremongering. So they didn't really go to much trouble to speak to anyone from the World Health Organization or talk about any of the claims that are being made. And I think using the technical terminology and then using scare quotes around probably causes cancer, and that if it probably causes cancer, then it's not really that big a deal. Mm. So, yeah, interesting reporting there from the Australian, yeah.
And then The Age, we've got talk about the budget, which we might cover more in our next front page segment. But so this is about, of course, the looming May budget, and the Coalition Party are apparently they're using softer language about it. Doesn't say that much about the actual content of the budget, but it's talking up a speech that Treasurer Joe Hockey has given to the party room, which is saying that he's going to avoid his previous mistake. And I think it says one funny adjective about last year's budget was hairy-chested, and this year's budget is going to be a bit softer, and so who knows what all this kind of what it's actually suggesting.
Wax-chested? Yeah. Or
yeah.
Just hairless?
Yeah.
Generally. Yeah. Who knows? It's interesting because following the potential leadership spill, which never took place, there was a lot of discussion from Tony Abbott speaking about how they were delivering their message wrong and they needed to change their message. And so it may be that they're not going in quite as hard this time, but they've basically haven't substantiated at all what it means to have a softer budget and to not be such a wrecking crew. So it will be really interesting to see what comes out of this after a few months of this kind of going a bit soft, which is interesting because they've played it up so much that they're going hard, that they're tough, that now they need to backpedal, and they can't really do that without then painting themselves as as soft, which is something that conservatives don't really like doing.
Mm, doesn't really strike me as a classic, you know, Tony Abbott, Joe Hockey move to sort of...
No, but I guess that's what you have when he's exceedingly unpopular. There was an article on page three also about a poll of the most popular prime ministers in Australia, with John Howard right at the top quite convincingly, and Tony Abbott as the least popular prime minister of the past 40 years... Wow. And the least popular prime minister, according to coalition voters.
Okay.
So he's in a bit of trouble.
Mm. Mm.
Yep. Okay, so...
I think that's a wrap for the front page this morning.
Hi, my name's Sarah. I love coming here because they offer vegan food.
Hi, my name's Paul. This is my first time at Friends of the Earth. I think it's really awesome and the food's great. Really healthy and nutritious.
Friends of the Earth Food Co-op, 312 Smith Street, Collingwood. A tuneful experience.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the nurses' dispute in 1986 and the waterfront dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there, broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio and we're broadcasting live from the Baeda Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR, radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
Welcome back to Wednesday Breakfast. You're here with us, or joining us, from Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative, 312 Smith Street. And come down here and you can grab some amazing breakfast. I've seen some come out already and I've got jealous eyes, but we'll contain that for now. Next up, I'll be speaking to Anna Bodenberg and Mark Tyler about Earthworker Cooperative. Hi, guys. How are you this morning?
G'day. Thanks for having us on.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you. I just wanted to start out by asking, what is Earthworker for people who haven't come across the Earthworker Cooperative before?
That's a good question. Earthworker is, to some people, a really straightforward and dead obvious plan. To others, it's a little bit complicated and a bit airy-fairy. So the aim of the Earthworker Cooperative is to set up an Australia-wide network of worker-owned cooperatives in sustainable industries. We are starting that right here in Melbourne with a factory in Dandenong that produces water tanks for solar hot water systems.
So that's the kind of, I guess, the outcomes or the nuts and bolts of the project. But it's also, the purpose of it is to try and address kind of three related crises that most people, I think, acknowledge are happening at the moment, which is the ecological crisis around climate change, an economic crisis around basically the kind of industry, especially in Australia and globally as well, and the vulnerability of the service sector and other industries. And also the third one being, I guess, what you could call a political crisis. So one in which the vehicles that we need to actually affect those first two crises aren't readily available. And that the people who currently make decisions aren't making the decisions we want, and nor should they be the ones who are making decisions that affect a lot of people. So it's trying to address those three crises. And the tactics by doing that is, as Anna said, the network of worker-owned and run cooperatives in sustainable industries. So it's trying to bring back the ability for people to make the decisions that affect them about what is produced and how we produce it too.
I've heard a bit about this being framed in terms of just transitions as something that came out of climate movements and the move away from simply trying to shut down dirty coal industries and other fossil fuel dominated industries that we don't necessarily want, but actually creating that alternative. How do you see just transitions as fitting into the picture with Earthworker?
Yeah, just transitions is definitely one of the really important frameworks that Earthworkers come through. So I guess we've got two bases, one sort of in the union movement and like looking at our labour, and the other one is a just transitions framework more from the green movement. So it's about addressing this idea that that to solve climate problems, we need to shut down coal, and that doing so will get rid of jobs, and that, you know, that we're all just about, you know, shutting down these industries and not providing any solutions. I guess our view and the just transition sort of idea is that there are communities that are reliant on these industries, and it's not their fault that they live in these communities, that they work in these communities, that they rely on it, and that we need to help them through any transition that we make away from fossil fuels. So that's why one of our big support bases is in the Latrobe Valley. We've spent a lot of time down in the valley talking to people, and, you know, there's a lot of fear that we're going to close the coal mines, we're going to close the power stations, and those communities will cease to exist.
Mm. And I guess to add to that, so the idea has always been that, as you mentioned earlier, that we currently have a factory in Dandenong, a worker co-op in Dandenong producing solar hot water systems. But the idea is to has always been to expand to cut what people call carbon dependent areas, so places like Morwell, also Geelong with the automobile industry. And it's looking at how do you actually build trust in just transitions, because the language of it does make sense to people, but actually building that trust and that sense of like, yeah, yes, this can happen, that's a lot harder. And I mean, a lot of people who come from an environmental background, who have spent time down in Morwell, for example, or in the Latrobe Valley, where those people rely on the coal industry, there is a lot of those people, by many different people, have been really screwed over and over again by governments in particular, by business. And so it's like, how do you actually build a felt sense that what we're saying isn't just hot air? And so one of the key aspects of Earthworker is to show and not tell. So to actually, which is difficult on radio, but it is to have something that people can touch and feel and go, yeah, this is happening. So it's having something there that people can, so putting the factory in Morwell. So then it's saying, okay, well, this is happening now, you know, and we're actually, here's the solution, and why the hell isn't government doing anything? Why the hell isn't business actually responding? And it's also then a mechanism for green groups to say, who support Earthworker and a lot do, to say, we're part of this, you know. And so when the tired old tropes come out of jobs versus environment, those groups and say, no, that's not true. We're supporting this project, we're building jobs up, you know, we're actually part of trying to find some way to respond appropriately to what we're facing.
Yeah. And it sounds like the factory in Dandenong has been a really long time coming in terms of Earthworker putting in years and years of hard work in that. What's the latest with Eureka's future in Dandenong?
So Eureka's future is the workers' cooperative that we're setting up at this factory in Dandenong. The factory in Dandenong has been the Everlast factory, and it's been a partner of Earthworker for many years. So even when they were at the top of their game, you know, when there was a boom in solar hot water and they were doing really well, they were always intending that when the time was right, they would transition into Eureka's Future Workers Cooperative and come under the Earthworker Co-op banner, I guess. So at the moment, we are in that process of mutualisation. Through the crowdfund last year and a few rounds of investments, we're raising the capital to actually make that buyout happen. And we're also in the process of training up the workers there and like starting those discussions of what it is to be a worker owner. How is this different from what it was before? Because, of course, you know, the workers are down there. They're still doing the same work. They're producing the tanks like they were 2 months ago. You know, for them, it's just like it's a bit of a learning curve of like what is different, and actually for them being able to take on their power, you know, because some of the, you know, the managers, the directors are actually coming over as worker owners too. And so now they're all equals. And that's, you know, a big step for a workplace.
Yeah, and it's a great structure. It sounds like as it's a network of cooperatives, or trying to establish a network of cooperatives, it's not actually having power over those workers. It sounds like what you're trying to do is establish them so that they're self-managing.
Yeah, indeed. And there's a strong focus on autonomy within Earthworker and a network autonomy. And that network is within the workplaces, it's one worker, one vote, but also then each co-op within Earthworker network, and we also have an engineering co-op, for example, that's starting up. There's also a small beer brewing co-op as well and others. But each co-op would have one vote. And the Earthworker organising co-op doesn't vote within that. So that there anyone who is more that facilitate part of the facilitating of co-ops doesn't have decision-making power, they only support. And so then each co-op within that network then has one vote, and so controls and can mutually support each other. And that network is also intended to cross borders. There's nothing about restricting it within Australia. We have a verbal agreement with a sister co-op in Argentina and are in conversation with people in Ireland, in Cuba, in Venezuela. So it is about extending over traditional borders, which we need to do, because if we can't just be a localised thing. The only way this is going to work is if it is global as well. So
yeah, that's great. I'd observed in Earthworker over the last few years that there's been a surge in membership, especially among younger people joining the ranks. And I wanted to know what attracts people to become Earthworkers.
I think it... Yeah, Crunch is saying the hoodies.
The hoodies are very stylish.
Cozy hoodies, aside from the hoodies, I think for a lot of people, Earthworker brings them a sense of hope. Like, we get a lot of people coming to join who, you know, they've been activists, they've been protesters, they've kind of gone out and blockaded and gone to rallies and, you know, undertaken numerous actions, even if they're just, you know, clicktivism or whatever, of like, you know, oh, this is a bad thing, we need to shut it down. Oh, this is a bad law, we need to oppose it. And there's not that much of like, we need to build something. So it's the hope that we ourselves can take on this and can work towards making something that will actually help address, you know, the environmental problems we have. So it's also about building up our power and realising our power. And I think a lot of that also comes through the sort of strong trade union background that we've had, you know, of this is our labour, what are we doing with our labour? What are we contributing to? And sort of taking that approach that we don't want to walk towards something that is socially damaging or environmentally damaging. We want our work to be actually, you know, for the good, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really empowering vision. I just wanted to finish up and ask, how can people get involved and support Earthworker?
Well, we've got a couple of things coming up. There's for people who are interested in becoming Earthworker organisers, which all are welcome to do that. There's an Earthworker organising training camp coming up on the 23rd and 24th of May. Also, there's an info session on starting a worker-owned co-op. That's on May 30th. There's going to be a focus on cleaners and looking at people who are currently working as cleaners and looking at starting up cleaner co-ops, but anyone's welcome to come to that. We also have a stall at South Gippsland Sustainability Fair this weekend.
And there is, of course, our usual meeting. So we meet at Trades Hall. Our next meeting is on Monday at 6 p.m.
So that's this Monday coming. And, I mean, but also to emphasise that Earthworker is only one part of a constellation of I guess, what could be called a movement around both worker control and also trying to respond appropriately to the crises we're facing. You know, doing it ourselves is another example of that, and we consider them a sister entity in that. So, I mean, it's good if people are drawn towards Earthworker, and there's certainly a gravity that draws people to it. That's great. But also it is about people just working where they stand, and then what we want to be doing is connecting with people and looking at how can we mutually support each other. So it's certainly not about everyone becoming Earthworkers necessarily, but also working out how can we build relationships of trust and mutual support. So
yeah. Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us, Anna and Mark.
Thanks for having us.
So I was just speaking with Anna Boddenberg and Mark Tyler, who are part of the Earthworker Cooperative. If you want to catch their organising retreat, it's on the 23rd and 24th of May, and there will also be an information session on May 30th about starting a cooperative, particularly for people who are interested in the cleaning industry. That was Eileen by Subtle Turnips. You're joining us here this morning as part of the Sustainable Breakfast Series. We're at Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative at 312 Smith Street in Fitzroy. So come on down and grab breakfast and be part of our live audience. I just spoke with Anna Boddenberg and Mark Tyler from the Earthworker Cooperative. And they mentioned something that's actually quite related to our next interviewees. Sarah Davis and Theo Kitchener are with us here in Friends of the Earth Cafe speaking about the Resilient Co-op Network. Good morning, Sarah and Theo.
Good morning.
I saw you eating breakfast just earlier, Theo. How was it?
Yeah, it was delicious.
I'm quite looking forward to it. I'm sitting behind the panel and I'm just seeing all these people eating and I want to be part of it. So, the Resilient Co-op Network, what is it?
It's a little bit hard to describe.
Yeah,
It's becoming not just a network of cooperatives. It's essentially becoming an alternative economic system. So the premise is that we have a bunch of cooperatives or people doing interesting, resilient things. So for an example, one cooperative is farming backyards, and then we've got a whole bunch of others sort of in the works. And the idea is that if you're involved in any one of these co-ops, then you can get free stuff from all of the others. So if you're a farmer, you can get free bike repair, you can get free childcare, you could get free massage, you could get all kinds of things, and potentially as well, we might have some of our co-ops or I guess enterprises, they might be individuals, that actually earn money selling stuff to people outside of the network as well. And then the idea is to do a little bit of income sharing and be able to help cover each other's rent, even if you're not specifically earning money yourself. Mm. Because I think rent is the main thing that we're not going to be able to cover. Yeah.
So it kind of sounds like rather than thinking of the cooperative as a business, necessarily it's thinking of it as an economic entity, like a group of people who are unified, who are coming together to meet their various needs.
Exactly.
Does that sound...
Yeah, which I think is basically part of the definition of a cooperative. It's an organisation that meets its members' needs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be through money.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And how did this idea of forming a cooperative come about?
I don't know. I guess I've been thinking about starting a network of resilient, sustainable workers' cooperatives for 5 years or so. But initially it was a lot more money-based and that sort of thing, and then I was really keen on local currencies. And then over the last year or so, I guess I had a lot of conversations with people that just kind of made me think about, you know, local currencies seem to me to be, you know, a stepping stone to get where we actually wanted, which is a moneyless economy. And yeah, these conversations over the last year or so just helped me realise actually we could have a bounded system and create that trust where we can just jump straight to where we want to be. And one example of that as well was during the Great Depression, I read that there were actually these massive networks of cooperatives where people used to work 2 days a week in one cooperative or another and just get everything that they needed for free. And, like, I'm not talking about small networks of co-ops. This was serving, like, 10 million people in the US. Like, amazing stories. Mm. And a lot of them were very radically political.
Yeah.
Aware of that. Yeah, it's interesting.
And Sarah, you've been involved in the Resilient Co-op Network for what, about 6 months? Is that right?
Yeah.
That's right.
And what pulled you in?
About 3 months. Just wanted to say.
Oh, yeah. I guess being pulled into the Doing It Ourselves network and various other things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We started with putting a call out in the newsletter that we're writing for Doing It Ourselves, and we got a bunch of farmers, people interested in farming, that came along, and we also put a call out to say, hey, who wants to provide some of their backyard for us to farm in? And we were amazed at just straight away we had about 20 people say, yeah, come and farm my backyard. So, yeah, we've been going around making sure it's got the right sort of sunlight to grow veggies, and we've just started at a site in Westgarth.
So,
yeah, we've been digging and growing seedlings, and, yeah, the host has been getting involved as well, and her son, so... Yeah, and we've had a good response from people walking by in the neighbourhood as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know, you, Sarah, you've been involved in neighbourhood renewal, and Theo was one of the co-founders of the Sharehood. So it seems like both of you have had quite a background in, I guess, community development work. And so I was just wanting to know, how does the Resilient Co-op Network kind of relate to this building of community?
Yeah, well, I think it's about looking at what kind of skills people have already and what their passions are and what they're interested in doing. And I really think that, you know, we've got, I guess that's how we started with the farming co-op, because we looked at, well, you know, what's going to be the easiest place to start, and we've already got all these people around that are great at farming, growing veggies, and we thought we'd start there. And we sort of look at, well, what do people actually need to live? So we need food, so that was a great place to start. And yeah, we're looking at what else do we need housing, so we're interested in looking at co-op housing in the future as well.
Yeah, great. And maybe I could ask Theo, what's kind of motivating this push to have an alternative economic system? Why do we need it?
I guess two things. One would be just the world that we have at the moment isn't very nice, or in a way, like the system that we have. You know, there's a lot of unfairness, a lot of inequity, and it's anxiety producing as well. Like, there's a lot of precarity, and there's a lot of just general unhappiness and all of that kind of stuff. So to me, that's one really core reason, is to create a world where people's needs are always met, and where people have security and community, you know. So that's one thing. And the other thing, I guess, is that I believe quite strongly that there's a big economic collapse coming, you know, partially associated with the financial system and partially associated with peaking resources and climate change and stuff like that. And I think that we need to build alternative systems for meeting our needs at a local, resilient level.
Also, that's not what really drives me anyway. I just think, even if, you know, whatever happens, I just think this is a really regenerative, great way for people to live and make the best use of their skills and gifts. And it's just creating stronger communities.
Yeah, it's an interesting well-being thing about resilience work, in that you're talking about creating alternatives, but even if the worst doesn't come to pass, even if climate change wasn't that bad, and you know, even if the capitalist system just kept on going on strong and providing jobs for people and all of those things, we'd still end up with a whole lot of better things that we want.
Yeah, that's right. And a healthy way to live. Like, for me personally, I love getting away from the computer. Like, I can actually go out there and be outside and, yeah, work with some great people, and I'm learning things all the time. So, yeah, I'm having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I totally just see it as an experiment. It's a, can we make this work? And if we can, then maybe other people will do it too.
Mm, yeah. I've heard you speak about this as the gift economy, and you're talking about it as an alternative economic system. One of the things that I was interested to hear a bit more about is it's not only about getting free stuff for what you're doing, but also contributing by what you have the capacity to contribute.
Yeah.
Which I guess goes back to some very strongly egalitarian views. Could you speak a bit more about that?
Yeah, I guess the basic premise is from each according to their ability to each according to their needs. And I guess, yeah, I didn't mention the term gift economy because there's an ongoing debate going on within the collective about whether or not to call it the gift economy or the solidarity economy.
Or the share.
Share
economy.
Sharing economy, whatever. But I guess, yeah, the basic core idea is that people work because they want to contribute and because they love their work, and that people are given or receive stuff that they need because we care about each other and we want to meet our needs, each other's needs.
Yeah, such an inspiring idea. And I can see how it inspires a basis for so much more than what currently exists and becoming a broader and bigger part of our lives and the economic system.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, just to wrap up, how can people get involved in the Resilient Co-op Network?
Yeah, well, we write a newsletter, the Doing It Ourselves newsletter. So if people go to doingitourselves.org, they can look at previous newsletters and also sign up to the free monthly one that comes out.
And yeah, that's also got a good events listing of interesting transition and permaculture related stuff in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also people can contact us at info@doingitourselves.org.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks Great. So much for joining us, Theo and
Thanks.
Sarah.
Thank you, Regan.
So I was just speaking with Sarah Davis and Theo Kitchener, who are from the Resilient Co-op Network.
3CR Breakfast would like to say thanks to program sponsor, the New International Bookshop, for the financial support of this program. You can find NIBS in the basement of Trades Hall at 54 Victoria Street, Carlton.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant, and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Help 3CR support the rights of Indigenous Australians.
They mean to save our culture and save our dreams, our footprints, dreams, our songline, and keep our culture going strong.
Of course, a lot of the Aboriginals, having been stolen, were put into state care, and also others
were. The recognition of what our people have been through in the last 200 years, the recognition of our culture in the last 40,000 years, and the recognition of where we are heading into the future.
Welcome to Survival Day, Invasion Day. 223 years ago, the white man landed on our shores.
Subscribe to 3CR and help keep Indigenous voices on air. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. Subscribe now.
Dum da 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 dum da 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 boom 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 boom. Hi, I'm Rod Quantock, and you're listening to Fill in the Dots. You know who you're listening to. Why do I have to tell you who you're listening to? You know who you're listening to. You're listening to, yes, Fill in the 3CR Community Radio. You got it right. You've won a giraffe. We're at 8:55 a.m. We're on digital radio and streaming at 3cr.org.au. 3CR has been making trouble since 1976, and occasionally I've been part of the trouble that's been made. It's a vital part of our media landscape, and I'd encourage you to get a hacksaw, an oxyacetylene torch, and go up to the Dandenongs and bring down all those broadcast towers that aren't 3CR's towers, and let's make 3CR the only source of information to an information-starved, dumbed-down Australian community. Written, authorised, and spoken by Neil Mitchell.
I was speaking with Sarah Davis and Theo Kitchener as part of the Resilient Co-op Network. If you want to find out more about them, you can go to doingitourselves.org. You're joining us here at 3CR as part of the Sustainable Breakfast Series, and we're broadcasting from Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative, 312 Smith Street, Fitzroy. So come down and have breakfast with us.
And our next guests on this morning's show are one of the Friends of the Earth collectives, the Anti-Nuclear and Clean Energy Collective. And so we're joined here by Jem and Colin. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Have you had some of those pancakes yet?
Not yet.
Oh, yes. Some is beautiful.
All right.
Got the coffee.
And so we've been hearing about some exciting alternatives so far this morning with the Earth Worker Cooperative and the Resilient Co-op Network. And you guys do some work on anti-nuclear and clean energy. Would give us a little rundown of what the ACE Collective gets up to.
Well, the ACE Collective has been operating for decades out of Friends of the Earth here in Melbourne. So it's got a very long history of exposing, I guess, the nuclear industry in Australia and around the world, and what it does to the environment, what it does to Aboriginal people, what it does to remote communities, and to try to bring those stories to the city and to expand them so people here can find out about what's going on in faraway places. And also to make sure that we're ready to counter any pushes for nuclear expansion in Australia. So to do that, we need to talk about the alternatives, obviously. And luckily, you know, we get quite busy, and luckily there's quite a few groups at Friends of the Earth who are really onto that at the moment, like Yes to Renewables and Quit Coal. So all together we form a really nice sort of chain of groups to complement each other and talk about where we should be getting our energy from and what's a responsible way to build energy with communities in this day and age.
And Colin, I know you've got some information on nuclear developments around the world. What's ITER?
Yes, so I'm from France, actually, and in France we are the nuclear country. We love it. And so we decided, like 50 years ago, to build a new type of reactors called fusion reactors. So they think it's going to be like the new way of creating like a clean energy. Actually, we realized that it's going to cost us a shitload of money, like 10 billion euro. So it's a lot of money in, for example, for Europe, we're in economic crisis at the moment. 10 billion euro, it's massive. And this new super reactor is called ITER. So it's for International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor. So this, all this money is going to be injected in something that's going to be experimental. We're not going to create any electricity yet with this type of reactor. So it's something, it's like an absurdity.
Because it's often held out as one of the examples in arguments about nuclear and nuclear power is sort of, you know, third generation reactors, or there's not much actual knowledge about it. People say that, you know, what about those reactors that aren't going to produce waste? And
You need to realize that to create a fusion, we need to heat the core at over 100 million degrees. So this is really, really hot. And at the moment, we don't have the technology and the capacity to control this all this amount of heat. And how are we going to produce enough electricity to create 100 million degrees to be able to join cores together?
I think that so much of the nuclear industry is really built on promise and built on these ideas of these perfect reactors that haven't been created yet or that have plans but haven't been proven to be commercially viable at all. So even though the world has experienced quite a few devastating nuclear accidents, even though that might not seem like enough to say, okay, we've tried this industry, it's clearly not working out, let's drop it here. Instead of that, we keep seeing these magical ideas drawn up that deal with the waste problem, that deal with the weapons proliferation problem, and then that's put forward as an option when actually they don't exist yet. So, I guess that's one benefit that we have in dealing with now this Royal Commission in South Australia that's looking into the future of the nuclear industry in that state. All they've really got is a bunch of promises to put forward for these really idealistic reactor types that haven't been proven yet. So in that way, that helps us out.
And so you mentioned that commission, and I know the radioactive exposure tour later this year is happening, and that's a trip that takes people from the cities to developments in the nuclear chain around Australia, including South Australia. Could you give us a little bit of a lowdown on the, as it's affectionately known, RAD Tour for this year?
Yeah, sure. So for those who haven't heard, the RAD Tour is the Radioactive Exposure Tour, and it's a trip that really started around 30 years ago when the Olympic Dam uranium mine was being drawn up and when it was under construction. And it was actually a few people who, I'll name their names, Isla Marks and Eric Miller. They were coordinating the ACE Collective for many, many years, and they thought, why don't we take people out there, drive a few thousand kilometres out to the desert, talk to the traditional owners about what this project means to them, go and have a look at the sites, do some filming, do some photographing, and then bring this story back to the city and see what we can do to support the folks out there who want to stop this project. And that's how the RAD Tour started. They found that people wanted to come, so then they were doing them a couple of times a year, every year, and then they formalised it and called it the Radioactive Exposure Tour. And that's been happening every year since then, so for about 30 years. And, yeah, that's really the idea, basically, to hit the road and get out of the city limits and see what's actually going on and talk to people in remote places and find out what they want from us, so it's so that it's not always their responsibility to try and penetrate the walls of the city to get their voices heard here.
And last year, I know the RAD Tour, we travelled up to the Northern Territory and up to Muckaty, where there was a proposed federal radioactive waste dump, which only a month or two after the RAD Tour actually was canned by the federal government. So it was great to go up somewhere where something so current was happening and to sort of see that play out in the political process. And where is the RAD Tour going this year? What's the current issues?
So the RAD Tour this year, we have a really, really good tour. We're going to New South Wales this time. We're going direction the Lucas Heights reactors near Sydney. We're going to go roughly up to make it simple, because we got how many Ks, Jem? Like 6,000 Ks, something?
Last year was about 6,000, but this year it's 4,500.
Oh, 4,500, yeah, just easy. So in over like almost 2 weeks, we're going to go through like near Sydney, near Dobbo, Broken Hill. We're going up to Lake Hare and coming down to Woomera and Adelaide, and we're finishing around SOS at Adelaide.
So why New South Wales? What's happening? What's happening in Dubbo and where else did you say? Broken Hill.
Yeah, well, the RAD Tour has never been to New South Wales before, so we've been mixing it up the last couple of years. And New South Wales had a uranium ban running for 26 years, which was overturned by the Premier in 2012. Since then, there's been some companies cruising around in Western New South Wales looking for uranium and starting to put in proposals for mines. So it's going pretty slowly, partly because the uranium price is so low at the moment, so it's not really a profitable industry. And because they know that there's such a huge movement that will defeat them if they try. But
yeah,
anyway. and also there's quite a lot of really significant history in New South Wales. Like the first stop is to visit the site of where Australia's first nuclear power reactor was going to be built in Jervis Bay, and that was in the 50s and 60s, and specifically to provide uranium for nuclear weapons. And that reactor was actually a present from the United Kingdom to say, thanks for letting us bomb your country for nuclear testing in remote South Australia. So not a very nice present. Anyway, that reactor was cancelled, so now there's just foundations. And we're going to go and see that and hear the story about that. And then heading up to the Lucas Heights reactor, which is the one sort of small reactor, not for energy, just for research purposes, that Australia has. And I think they'll give us a really funny tour. They might not let us actually see anything. They'll probably give us a PowerPoint presentation in a room. But, yeah, we'll be meeting up with community outside the plant and finding out about about their take on it. And then heading through the Blue Mountains, where there's been a historic campaign to stop radioactive waste when the Arati-Wanti campaign was going on to stop the waste dump in South Australia. And they actually showed the government that it's too controversial to transport radioactive waste through the Blue Mountains. So then when the Muckaty campaign came along, all of the government's sort of transport reports said, nah, not through the Blue Mountains, it's going to be bad trouble there, people don't like it. So we'll hear about that, and then head west to Dubbo, to Cobar, Dubbo and Broken Hill, and try to find out what's going on around there with uranium exploration and what the communities there want from us.
So touching on lots of aspects of the nuclear chain in the history of bomb testing on Australian landscape and possible like nuclear power development and uranium mining and exploration and the former waste dump. Another thing is about where Australia's uranium goes, and you know, that's very controversial. There's in line a uranium export deal with India, and last year on the RAD tour we did have someone from India speaking about that. And where is that process up to?
So the deal to export uranium to India has been signed and an agreement has been written, and that's currently under consideration by JSCOT, which is the Joint Standing Committee on Treaties, and they're supposed to look at it and say whether the agreement's in line with Australia's international law obligations and whether the deal can go ahead. So far that agreement has had some really, really harsh criticism, and it's been criticised and slammed by people who would usually really support uranium export deals. So, for example, John Carlson, who actually ran the Australian Safeguards Office for 20 years and who supports nuclear power and who supports uranium export to India, even though India's not a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, he came out and wrote a really scathing critique of the agreement and said that it undermines the whole idea of Australia having safeguard agreements for uranium export. So I think they're kind of giving it a serious look, because it is a totally shocking agreement, and I think you can't even tell if Australian uranium ends up in nuclear weapons or not, and there's no right of recourse. So if India sort of uses Australian uranium in ways that it's not meant to, usually a country would be able to demand it back, but under this agreement there's no like right of recourse. And I mean, yeah, I wouldn't support Australia's uranium exports anywhere. We have a long history of exporting to nuclear weapons states and not really having any standards anyway. Yeah. So it's not just about India, it's about Australia, what Australian uranium does all over the world. For example, melting down in the reactors at Fukushima in 2011, which it was then proven that it was Australian uranium in every single reactor. So there's no responsible way that Australia can sell uranium, I don't think.
Thanks. And how can folks get involved with the Anti-Nuclear and Clean Energy Collective?
That's very simple. If you want to get involved, you come at Friends of the Earth or you come on a website. So get in touch with the ACE Collective in a website. You'll find phone numbers, you'll find email address. Send a friendly email and we got our coordinator. He's going to recontact you and he's going to give you all the information to come along for a meeting. And you'll see it's going to be really fun. We also have a Facebook page and a blog regarding the radioactive exposure tool where you can register now. We got like the 10th first person who register, they get a prize. Ooh. Actually. Which prize do we get?
A t-shirt.
Ooh, a cool t-shirt to come along at the Rad Tour.
What are the dates of the Rad Tour? I don't know if we touched that.
It's the 27th of June till the 8th of July.
Great.
So we leave from Melbourne and we come back to Melbourne.
It's on radioactivetour.com is where there's some info, and it's got the links to register. So definitely come. It will be really amazing.
And it's going to be rad.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jem and Colin, for joining us this morning. Go and get some of those quinoa pancakes. And we'll be coming right back with this morning's special Wednesday breakfast broadcast from Friends of the Earth right after a couple of community announcements.
Thank you.
Thank you, Crunch.
3CR are selling kaffiyeh Palestinian scarves in support of the last factory that produces them in Hebron, Palestine. All profits will be donated to the reconstruction efforts in Gaza and support Palestinian industry. Just $25 each. These are traditional scarves available in red and black, or you can choose from a modern design. Go to 3cr.org.au/shop to buy online or drop into the station during business hours.
Welcome back to the Sustainable Breakfast Series. You're joining us here at 3CR. We're broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative at 312 Smith Street in Fitzroy. So come down here, grab some brekkie, and you can be part of our live audience here.
And next up on this morning's show, we're joined here this morning by Bic Hua, who is the Manager of Community Partnerships and Programs with CoHealth. Good morning, Vic.
Hello, good morning, Emma, and good morning, everybody. What's an atmosphere?
Yeah,
that's
it's
beautiful.
Great. Thanks for joining us this morning. First, I was just wondering if you could briefly describe what CoHealth is, because the community health centres in the area. But
yes, CoHealth is a leading provider of community health services in Victoria. It was formed last year out of the merger of North Yarra Community Health with Western Region and Dutigala Community Health Centres. You might know all of those community health centres. We have over 40 sites across Melbourne's western, northern and eastern suburbs. And we provide services such as medical, dental, allied health, mental health, counselling, and especially specialist health services. And we are all actively engaged in the community to improve the health and connectedness of some of Melbourne's most vulnerable populations, including those living in City of Yarra public housing estates.
And so right around here at Friends of the Earth and 3CR, I know there's the Collingwood Community Health Centre down on Hoddle Street, and I think another community health centre on Brunswick Street. So good to know about those local centres. And I was interested, I know you work on a project called Living in Harmony, which works with people in housing, community housing, about domestic violence. Could you give us a brief description of that that project?
Yes, I am very pleased to talk about our Living in Harmony project. It is a pilot place-based project on prevention of violence against women within the three main language groups on the public housing estate of Collingwood, and it's the Vietnamese community, the Chinese community, and the Horn of African communities. Would you like me to explain more?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, it's a three-year project, and what happened is that we started with around 2009-2010, and there was some concerns from the communities at that stage to raise about the issues of family violence on the public housing estate of Collingwood especially. And so then the communities came together with some local agencies and we discussed and looked at ways of how we can prevent it from occurring in the first place. And so in 2011, at the end of 2011 in November, we started the project. And the project is mainly have a project worker, like project coordinator, who then recruited 16 men and women from those three cultural communities to work with their respective communities and mainly with three aims.
Mm.
So firstly, we would like to raise awareness about family violence, which was a kind of taboo issue within those communities and who, which was not very much talked about. Secondly, we would like to raise the ideas and issues of rights for women within those communities. They don't really know like what their rights are, and so then they don't know how to access and all those issues. And the thirdly, and we would like to promote healthy and respectful relationships, gender equality, and promoting non-violent norms.
Mm-hmm. Mm, so it sounds important that you actually got facilitators from within those communities, because what difficulties do people sometimes experience in accessing services from mainstream community in Melbourne if you're from a different cultural or linguistic background? Is it, have you found that having people from within those communities be really involved in the implementing of the program, that that's been an important aspect of it?
Definitely. Like, without the language, and you know, like, that is that language barrier, and people, like, don't feel confident or, you know, like, you know, their confidence of coming and talking to people from their own language. And we have been very fortunate, because then the worker also like you know, like work on the in the area that they know like about the issue, and so then approaching and recruiting the men and women from those language cultural services then are quite difficult, but also like, you know, like it has helped with the way that how like we can approach the communities.
Mm. And I guess who wouldn't automatically think about domestic violence when they think about a health centre? What do you see as the links between, I guess, domestic and family violence and health of people and communities?
Family violence has got, it's not only physical, it has different ways of like the how the we code about family violence, and it includes not only physical but also psychological, mental, financial even, which are very, very, you know, like strange to the those communities, and it impacts on the way that how people live and how women especially like deal with the their daily lives.
And how long is the project going for, or is there, what's next? Is it looking to expand to other areas?
So what happened, so what happened is that it's a 3-year project, and we started the project in 2011, so then it finished just recently in December, but it's that the 3-year project, like look at the impact, the short-term impacts that how it has created within those communities, and looking at expanding more into the other public housing estate.
Mm. Mm. And do you think that, have you seen change within those communities and attitudes, and how have you found that there's been differences between communities and cultures in terms of how they've responded to the program?
Throughout the 3-year project, we have 16 bilingual facilitators in those three communities. We have organized 26 activities altogether for the communities, and we also like reach about 900 people in the communities on the estate. But that's not to say that you know, like it has a multiple effects and to the other communities as well, and to the relatives and neighbours of those people attending and participating in the activities. So the change that, of course, you know, like the impacts of the change would be a very long-term, you know, like process, but within those 3 years and after the period, then we have noticed that now women have freely talked about family violence, like which was a taboo issue that they didn't talk about. They are involved in activities, for example, like the car maintenance activity for the African women, which was, you know, like they asked, like, okay, they told their, you know, like their husbands, okay, you are now looking after the kids and, you know, cooking the, you know, the meals while we are going to attend those, you know, like the car maintenance. And then it gave them confidence and they know that they can do it. It's not only the men can do it and they can do it too,
So it sounds like things like car maintenance, and so it's quite a broad, like, look at, you know, different ways to address power and relationships and, you know, normative gender roles and things like that. So sounds...
That's right, yep. So apart from that, for example, we have gym sessions, like, especially for women, and it's not only, like, the gym sessions itself, but it's the way that it was, because it happened at night, for example, they would say that, okay, we have 2 hours for ourselves, like, you know, husbands, you don't put your feet up and watch television, but then you have to cook the meals, you have to look after the kids, we're going to have our time. Like, you know, like, it's very, very good.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a really interesting and worthwhile project. And if anyone wanted to find out more about it or, you know, how to get involved, I guess it's at the moment it's in the housing estate in Collingwood, but if that reaches out to other areas, how would they find out about the Living in Harmony?
You can contact CoHealth in Collingwood, and the number is 9411-4333. And or you also like follow-ups on, you know, Twitter and Facebook.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Bikwa, for joining us this morning. Make sure you get yourself some free breakfast. And we look forward to hearing more about how that program goes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
And next up, we'll be hearing some live music.
So this musician that we've got live here in our makeshift studio at Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative, 312 Smith Street in Fitzroy, is Drongo. He'll be playing a couple of songs. He's got a show coming up soon. And they're also a volunteer at the Friends of the Earth Cooperative.
Do you want to get in contact with a socially progressive audience and diverse communities? Are you organising a forum, concert, festival, rally, call-out or film screening and want to let people know? Unlike other community radio stations, 3CR doesn't have commercial advertising, but we do offer not-for-profit, community and government organisations a chance to connect with 3CR's diverse and lively audience. Go to www.3cr.org.au and find out about our very affordable community announcements, or call 3CR on 9419 8377 and get your event on air.
Welcome back to Wednesday Breakfast. You're joining us here on 3CR 855 AM. And today's show is part of the Sustainable Breakfast Series that we've got all week that's broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative, 312 Smith Street in Fitzroy. So come down and join us this morning or for our other breakfast shows this week and get a free delicious brekkie and be part of our live audience. And we have some live music coming up for us now with Drongo, who's come in. Hi, Drongo.
How you going?
Good. It feels kind of rude addressing you as that, but I'm guessing
that's okay. Yeah, that's fine.
How are you this morning?
Yeah, good.
Yep, and you're going to play a couple of tracks for us?
Yeah, so this couple come from my EP that I'll be putting out soon.
Oh, cool. Have you got a name for your EP yet?
It's called Songs in Sonar.
Great. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Take it away.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll be damned if all that I do is all that I can. A dirty stupid, slightest affair that you see every move. A damnedest of fools who plays by the rules and feels like you're missing out. Take my hand, babe, understand, I won't let you down. I will lay you down. I will lay you down. I will lay you down.
This one's called Deep Space. I am
light in this dark place. Casting rainbows through a glass pane, and cast no shadow in this light place. Well, I've been feeling, and she is leaving again.
And that was Drongo playing here live for us at Friends of the Earth Food Cooperative, 312 Smith Street in Fitzroy. And Drongo's got a show coming up. Can you tell us when that is and where we can go?
Yeah, we're playing the April the 11th to Standard Bar Open. We've got a few bands on for the night. And Seth, who works here also, is going to be playing. And a couple of people that work or have worked here are playing in my band, mm-hmm. which is Drongo and the Drongos.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you, Drongo and the Drongos. That's great.
And we've had a jam-packed show this morning. We have had, first up, Regan spoke to
Anna Bonberg and Mark Tyler about Earthworker. And you can find out more about Earthworker by jumping online and checking out their website. After that, I spoke to Sarah Davis and Theo Kitchener from the Resilient Cooperative Network. And you can find out more about them on doingitourselves.org.
And I spoke with Jem and Colin from the Anti-Nuclear and Clean Energy Collective here at Friends of the Earth. We also heard about the upcoming radioactive exposure tour. You can find out about those through the Friends of the Earth Melbourne website. And I then spoke with Bic Hua from the CoHealth, which is the Community Health Centre Network in Yarra. And she was speaking about the Living in Harmony project. And we just heard a song from Drongo, a couple of songs from Drongo and the Drongo of Drongo and the Drongos. So thanks very much, everyone, for coming into the live audience this morning and getting yourselves some delicious breakfast. And we'll be broadcasting all week.
Yeah, so come in tomorrow or Friday and get your free breakfast and be part of our live audience. Thanks so much to Michael, our techie, who's here today, Elena and Ronnie, our producers. I've been Regan.
And I'm Crunch.
Thanks for joining us on our Sustainable Breakfast series at 3CR.
You've been listening to 3CR Breakfast, community news and independent current affairs.
I'm Claire Burns.
Adrian Wong.
Diana Beaumont.
Caden Nick.
Rihanna Whitson.
Ron and Dean.
Katie White.
The uranium mining area.
Shake-up of the Australian Defence Force.
It's women who seem to miss out yet again.
Coal-fired power station.
Carbon price mechanisms.
Ongoing protests in Egypt.
Some current affairs goodness for you this morning.
3CR's Tuesday Breakfast Show.
Wednesday Breakfast.
Thursday Breakfast.
Friday Breakfast.
We've got a massive show today.
Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. on 3CR Digital, 855 on the AM dial, and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. One of these days, and it won't be long.